want to thank Moshe very much. He's really put a lot of energy into his running the PTO, and I was honored he asked me long ago. Thank God, very, very planned out and thought out, so I want to thank him for all his efforts for the PTO, and of course, Miriam, thank you for your efforts for tonight. And of course, I want to thank, most importantly, if this is from the Shomer Nursery, I want to, Shomer Preschool, I want to thank our director, Siri Kinsbrenner. I see Nadine Katz here, one of our lovely teachers, one of our wonderful teachers, Baruch Hashem. And I'm not missing any other staff members, right? Just want to make sure. I see a husband of a staff member, Jeff Weinberg, Baruch Hashem. But it's, whatever we speak about tonight, it's very, very much a partnership between home and school. And I think I really want to thank Suri and the entire staff for creating such a loving environment for our children, which is so important. And thank you very, very much. So you'll forgive me. I don't consider myself an expert educator at any level. Maybe high school. I taught high school for years, but certainly early education. I don't consider myself an expert. But I thought, thank God, I've learned things about education and child raising from many wonderful people. Want to sort of just share some thoughts. Honestly, like all good mussar, classic mussar is normally not great novel ideas. Classic mussar is reflecting on things that probably if we would think about, we would have come to ourselves. But just to think about it, I know for myself, I have no idea if this will be constructive for any of you, but this was very good for me to think about what to say because it made me think about a lot of things myself. And I had to ask myself why I was given the opportunity to give this talk, and the best reason I could come up with is sometimes you hear people give talks and you say to yourself, wow, that person is so this and so that, I can never be like that. But I know for a fact that many of you see my terrible struggle Monday through Thursday mornings getting my wonderful daughter out of the car into the nursery school, so nobody can be intimidated by anything that I say tonight, seeing how complicated even getting my daughter out of the car is for me. I think that's, this is not intended as a response to what you just said, sorry, but I think we'll leave comments for the end, God willing. So I made a list for myself. What would I hope personally, what would I hope would become of my children? Not what would they do for a living and where would they live, and but as people, what do I hope for my children? So, I mean, think about it for a moment. It's a pretty daunting question, actually. I just want to share a few things that I just jotted down. My guess is most of you would agree with most of them. Maybe we'd have differences in the list. I hope my children grow up to be from Jews. I hope my children are well physically and emotionally. I hope my children are self-confident adults. I hope my children have healthy understandings of their strengths and weaknesses. I hope my children are able to ultimately communicate their emotions and their desires effectively. I hope my children are able to make decisions for themselves. I hope my children are happy to be from. And I hope my children have a meaningful connection to Yiddishkeit. I'm sure many of you could come up with a much better list, but that was a basic list that I thought of. And so what I would like to make some humble suggestions tonight is what we can do at such a young age. Obviously, it's such a complicated path up ahead for years, but at a nursery school age, what we could be thinking about and working on to hopefully at least our hishtadlus, so much is in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we always have to remember that our children have bechira. Our children have their own free will, but what can we do as parents? So I want to point out what I did not say as a goal, and I think this is really, really important. I do not hope to be able to determine what my child does when. Now, that's a very elementary thing when you hear it, but you really have to think about it. We all want to have perfect children, or that's how the phrase goes in some circles. What does that mean? So we, and I, Chas v'Shalom, don't mean anybody when I say this, but we have images of the perfect child. not out of my car, but the parent says to child, it's time to come. Child comes. Maybe there's even a big smile on their face. Child is always on time. Child is always well-behaved. Child is never disrespectful at home or at school. Child, by the way, does excellently in school. Even from a young age, they're the best drawer of everything and so on and so forth. I'm going to be very blunt with you. It's not just that that's not what I dream about for my children. I would be scared if that's what my child was. To be very, very candid, because as someone who did teach high school for years, I've met those perfect children. And I've connected with those perfect children years later also, by the way. I assure you, you don't want your kid to be a perfect child. You don't want it. Because generally speaking, of course, there are exceptions, obviously, but generally speaking, those are the children that are programmed and either they're doing everything they're supposed to be doing and they don't enjoy any of it. And then many, many times they just stop at some point. Or they're not emotionally well people. So I just want to, I'm going to talk about this more later, but I just want to make it very clear from the beginning. I think so much of what we're going to be talking about is really about embracing our children's shtuyot, sillinesses, chutzpahs, weaknesses. We need to embrace them. That's our job as parents. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to program robots, he would have made parenting much easier. It's not easy. It's not easy. And we have to embrace that challenge. Just to develop this point, drop further, the famous pasuk that any school worth anything has to quote at some point or another is Chanoch l'nar al pi darko, right? Educate a child according to his or her path. So just reflect on that for a moment. And then, so of course, everyone says, wow, you know, every child is different. You have to educate your child in the appropriate way. Wonderful. MS, true, great. So by definition, that means that there's not one size fits all. So if my role as a parent was going to be that my child would be perfect, how could it not be one size fits all? Obviously, that's not my role as a parent. Obviously, I need to embrace my child's unique strengths and weaknesses and run with it. And so that's a very different set of goals. So, if that's what we believe, if I want my child, down the road I want my child to be doing the right things, of course, but it's much more important. If I have a choice right now, should I do X and X will maybe point things in the way of my child being a well child and a self-confident child, or why ensure that my child does the exact right thing right now. I want X. So if that's what I want, so then by definition, I need to give my child space to grow. I need to give my child the opportunity to make decisions for him or herself. I need to give my child the opportunity to make his or her own mistakes. I need to give my child the opportunity to deal with the consequences of their decisions. I need to give my child the opportunity to fail and, by the way, be able to see themselves in the mirror and still hopefully like what they see after they fail. And that's just a very small list. But I think we have to really accept that as a given. So, the obvious question when you talk about such an idea is, so what does that mean? I mean, so it's just all hefker? It's all just everything goes? I mean, that sounds very, very, very loose. So obviously we have to keep our children safe. Obviously we have to use a lot of common sense. But there's a very beautiful idea that's quoted in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, which again, we have to use our common sense knowing our children and our families, but just as a general klal, a general rule. So his big thing was, at least how he's quoted, is that if it's something that your kid isn't going to do on their way to the chuppah anyway, don't worry too much about it. So just imagine the following, and I assure you this is a regular occurrence in the Rosenbaum home. Okay? So I'm dressing a child in the morning, and the child decides that it really is more attractive for the tag to show on the outside of the garment. I mean, that's more exciting. Why would you? I'm calling it inside out, but it's just more attractive that way. And it's important to child. Or child says, by the way, I just want to mention, she still gives classes. Judy Rosenthal, for anyone who's not aware, gives the most wonderful series of talks. She does it in groups for parents of children around this age. It's about communication. It's great. So she regularly talks about, at least in my discussions with her, she spoke about an example, something along the lines of that's how it processed in my mind. I don't remember if this is the exact example she gave. Let's say you get up in the morning and your child decides, that's it, they're going to wear pajamas to school today. Not the pajamas they wore to bed last night, I just want to be clear. You know, clean clothes, but they're going to wear pajamas today. Even if Montessori didn't declare it pajama day, you know. So ask yourself a question. So is that where it makes sense to make the grand fight of the day? Is that what I need to fight about? So, by the way, we all have things that are more important to us and less important to us. Happens to be for my house, if a kid wears pajamas, you know, we're good. You know, there are probably things that I'm more particular about in my house that you're probably less particular about in your homes. Everyone's different. But Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's point is an interesting thing. Probably they're not going to wear pajamas to their chasna. Now, but let's take another example. Let's say they speak rudely to another child. Now, our children are far from perfect, and there's no way we can ever control them. That's not going to work. But that's a bigger deal. Because, by the way, there are people who, at their chasna, will speak rudely to someone. And they're disrespectful to a teacher. Again, I don't mean World War III over it, but that's a big deal. But so one has to speak appropriately to one's child, but that's something that probably is much more worth dealing with and addressing. But of course, the greatest irony, and this is why so many things in life require being comfortable inside one's own skin, is if my kid goes to school in pajamas, you and everybody else in the carpool line know that my kid showed up in pajamas. And that has to be okay with me. But if my child said something disrespectful to another kid or to their sibling, whatever it is, none of you know. So the question is, what's driving me? Is what's driving me what everybody else thinks of me as a parent, or what's driving me what I feel is important? That's a very important thing. That's a very important distinction. Okay. I hope I'm not belaboring the point, but I want to give you two theoretical examples to just reflect on. Imagine if you could meet a child, probably not nursery school age, let's say elementary school age, let's say 7 years old, and you meet this child, and this child, maybe a little older than seven, I don't know, child is uniquely inquisitive. And they look around at the world, and they have all these wonderful questions. And by the way, they feel abundantly comfortable sharing what they know about something, sharing their thoughts about something. That sounds great, right? I mean, when you think about it, that the child is clearly comfortable with themselves, the child clearly has confidence. It sounds wonderful, amazing. So, again, we need a lot of siyata deshmaya. But theoretically speaking, what do I think that child's home looked like when that child was 3 years old, if this is the 7-8-year-old child that I'm seeing in front of me? What do I think that child's home looked like? So I'll tell you what I think. I think that this child was most likely having conversations with parents and others for years, and the child, honest to goodness, believed that people cared what he or she had to say about something. Right? Sounds like a fair statement? If no one ever listened to this child unless they were crying or screaming, and no one ever asked this child what they thought about anything, it's unlikely that at 8 years old they're going to be all confident. That's just life. But it requires years of that, I think. I think it's logical. So this is believe me, this is an uncomfortable conversation to ask for me too. Do we have conversations with our children? Do we ask what they think about things? And I want to be very clear. I'm not asking you, what did you do in school today? That's a good question. But do we? What do you think? What Abba? Why is this? Da, 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 da. So listen, it's difficult enough for us to drop everything and respond to the question. That's a challenge in its own right. But imagine if a child grows up believing that the parents are really interested in his or her thoughts about a given thing. What an amazing chesed we've done for our child. And the follow-up to that, besides what questions we ask, that seems pretty steep. How do we spend time with our children? This is such a challenge today. This is so hard today. So my guess is we have a lot of busy people in this room, but with all due respect, my guess is I'm as busy as anybody in this room. Possible not, but if not, I'm at least in the competition. I think that's a fair thing for me to say. I want to tell you something, unless it's a uniquely pressing matter, if I'm driving my child somewhere, I do not speak on the phone. I don't speak on the phone. If I'm sitting with my child at a doctor's appointment or a barber shop or whatever it is, again, there are definitely times where it's a pressing matter, but I make a conscious decision, okay, this is important, I need to talk on the phone. If I'm sitting with my child, that's for my child. That time is for my child. And I hope and pray that by doing that, I'm conveying a very powerful message to my child. Not just that I love my child, but more than that, I value time that I spend with my child, and I value the opportunity to speak with my child. So I'll say something else, and here's where I can't say I'm as good as I'd like to be. But imagine you're sitting at the kitchen table, dining table, however it is, and it's not a full-fledged family dinner. But there's one kid who happens to be sitting with you. Your spouse or whoever else is taking a nap Shabbos afternoon, and it's just you and this one child. Now, many, many times that child has no interest in talking to you. And they'd much rather play whatever they're playing. And then I try not to be an overbearing father. I don't plop my child in front of me, talk to me now. I'm not saying that. And if they're not interested in talking to me, I can certainly find things to do with myself. But imagine if we take those moments where if we would start a conversation, our child might be interested in talking to us. And you know what? And if they don't pick up the ball, fine. That's fine. I can go back to whatever magazine or Dvarta or whatever it is I'm reading. That's fine. But imagine if every time I find myself in that situation, I make it my business to try to strike up a conversation. I don't know. I think it's a lofty goal, but I think it's maybe not 100% of the time, but I think it's attainable many, many times. So by the way, personally, if it's a long family drive, that's like pikuach nefesh. That's like a different story. But in other words, if I'm driving carpool, whatever it is, Friday afternoons aren't at the ball game. But this is my carpool partner Fridays. But if I'm picking up from school, so if my child asks me to turn on the CD, I'm happy to turn on the CD. But if my child doesn't ask for it, I don't play anything. I don't play W2P. I don't play a shir. I don't play music. And by the way, and if nobody talks, I still don't play anything. Because if for some reason the child wants to talk at some point, I want to be available to them. I want to share with you something inspiring or chilling or a little bit of both. So one would hope that if a child needs a therapist for counseling for some reason or another, one would hope that parents find the right counselor and it's very helpful and very effective and so on and so forth. So a therapist, a wonderful therapist, once told me, forgive me for not having the details here, that there was once a study done that the greatest benefit of having a child go to therapy is the one-on-one time the parent has with the child on the way to and from therapy. Isn't that an interesting thing? I'm saying it's a very striking thing. Kanai Nahara, you have multiple children families. How many times does a parent have one-on-one time with the child? And imagine a child's going to a weekly or bi-weekly appointment. Oh my gosh, all this time. And it's, by the way, it's clear the parent is dedicating a lot of time just for this one child. And even without discussion, that's the time dedication. It's an amazing thing. And it clearly speaks to the value. Again, we're so busy. But it speaks to value, whether it be some people make specific times for children, for different children. Some people just try to grab the moments. But to try to do something, I want to just share with you a very personal experience. Some of you, I might have shared this with you before, I don't remember. So the Rosenbaum family was supposed to go to Chicago this past summer, and one of my children broke his arm the week that we were supposed to go to Chicago. And I just want to tell you, I was a really good parent. I even signed him up for a sports league. I was being an all-American dad. And he broke his arm in the game. What can I say, you know? So we had to cancel our trip to Chicago. And unfortunately, it wasn't feasible to remake that trip later in the summer. The reason we were going to go to Chicago was to visit my grandmother. And my absolute tzaddikas of a wife said to me, you know, you told your grandmother you're not coming to Chicago. If we can't go as a family, you at least need to visit your grandmother. So my wife told me, you fly to Chicago, whatever it is, a couple days, and just visit her, and then come back. I said, wow, you sure? She said, yeah. I said, okay, sounds good. Then she said, but this kid who can't go to camp because he has a broken arm, take him with you. And it was obviously a mixture of things, but my son, unfortunately, really was very restricted in what he couldn't do. And so a chavaya to go on a trip. My kids, we normally don't fly. You know, this is going to be an airplane. There's a lot of neat things about this trip. It was basically 36 hours, me and my son. I don't know about any of you. I know people do these kinds of things. I had never done anything like this before, just me and one child. So constant. And to be honest with you, my grandmother should be well for many years. She's not much of a conversationalist at this point in time. So sometimes you visit family and it's like you're totally embraced by the family. This is really me and my son, you know, one-on-one for basically 36 hours. It was an amazing experience. It was awesome. It was, and what was most striking about it was he acted, he's a wonderful boy, Baruch Hashem, but he acted at a much higher maturity level than he would have normally acted on a family trip. And that's not, I'm not complaining, but uniquely so. Like the courtesy that he conducted towards me, I should be so fortunate that my adult friends are half as courteous as my son was to me on this trip. And I think a significant part of it was that I clearly was treating him with this unique level of trust, affection, whatever words you want to use, and he responded to that. And it was a big musser. I think it was a real takeaway for me. I don't think this idea of really trying to make time for our children, really trying to talk to our children, I see no reason for it not to start from a very young age. I don't know what we have to wait for. I actually feel that if we don't build those habits and ingrain that self-image in the child from a very young age, it's amazing to think about how much of our children's impression of themselves is rooted in their impression of our impression of them, if that makes it specifically us, specifically their parents. Okay, I got another imagine. Imagine meeting a young boy, a young girl, again, probably not nursery school age, probably elementary, maybe even older, who clearly has a healthy self-image. You know how many kids today don't have a healthy self-image? You know how many adults today don't have a healthy self-image? Imagine if this person felt no need to speak ill of other people. I don't mean this from a halachic observance level. I mean their self-identity did not need to speak negatively of others in order to feel good about oneself. I mean, this is pretty lofty thing to think about. So wouldn't that be great if that would be our children? So I think there are goals that we can have in this regard. Again, whether or not we'll be perfect, but somewhere on that spectrum. So imagine if we can work on imbuing our children with a sense of confidence. So before we spoke about imbuing our children with the sense that we value them. So it's related. But if I can imbue my child with a healthy self-image, so we could spend 3 weeks on this topic, and I'm not the appropriate person to give the talk anyway. There's a lot of things said specifically about what adjectives we use when we're talking to our children. There's a lot of discussion of that. Obviously, to say you're a bad boy, you're a bad girl, that's bad. don't say that. You could say that was a bad thing to do, but the idea of putting a negative adjective on the human being is really strongly discouraged by so many sources. It's actually a really interesting thing. Many even discourage putting positive adjectives on a child. So just to think about for a second, again, people can say this much better than I can. My child doesn't need to hear from me, "You're so smart." In other words, if my child says something sharp, Baruch Hashem, my child doesn't need to hear from me, "You're so smart." Because actually the truth is, when you think about it, and this is very much true from a Hashkafic perspective also, if they're so smart, that's just we would say that's what Hashem made them, you know. So then, like, the goal is I need to be the smartest person in the room, and there's a lot of strange things that stem from them when you think about it. What my child needs to hear from me is, "Wow, you know, that was such an interesting thing that you said." Or, "I could tell you worked so hard to make that beautiful project." And my child doesn't need to be the best artist in the world, the most artistically talented person in the world. But if my child looks at themselves and says, "Wow, when I work hard at something, I can succeed," that's giving them something. I'm saying this very briefly. I don't know if I'm making sense of it. You know. So, and then to think about this, even when things don't go quite right. Let me tell you, I had an experience this past Shabbos. Okay, I'll tell you the real story, which my child doesn't even grasp, but that's okay. Just between us, right? So I'm walking home with my child. And I see him run ahead, and I see there's a piece of wood on the sidewalk, and he picks up the piece of wood. Now I, this wonderful father who clearly believes in the goodness of my children, the first thing that pops into my head is, "Oh my gosh, my kid's stealing somebody's piece of wood." So I call out to him, "Don't do that." My vision was kind of blocked by him because he was further ahead of me. What I see happened was there had been someone schlepping stuff back and forth to his van, and this fellow had dropped a piece of wood. Mm-hmm. So my child picked up the piece of wood to give it to the person. Okay? Now, my child had heard me say, "Don't do that." And by the way, here it is. My child's about 3 steps ahead of me, literally and figuratively. My child comes back and says, "I realized I wasn't supposed to do that on Shabbos, but I forgot when I first picked it up." And then, I gave it to the person. But his deal from the beginning was somebody dropped a piece of wood, he was going to pick it up for them. So I said to him, and I think I did this right. I said to him, "You know, so first of all, I want to tell you, you are correct. You're not supposed to pick up pieces of wood on Shabbos. It is muksa. That's true. But I'm so proud of you that you wanted to help this person pick up his thing. That was so nice." So we have to do that. We, of course, have to be complimentary. But we can be mechanech what's right and what's wrong, and still complement like motivations and things like that. And of course, it could go the other way too. It could be that someone did something right, but they like bragged about it or something like that. You know, so you could compliment the action and say, but you know, it might make someone feel bad if you brag about it. You know, I don't know. By the way, what my wife and I try to do a lot is when we see our child, one of our children doing something very positive, we make a point of letting the child realize that we tell the other parent about what it was. Not that the definition of good things or bad things is if your parents saw it, but to show our pride in the child. And of course, a million times over, we've all had that experience. The child is beaming. So what we're doing when we do that is we're building the child's own sense that they can do wonderful things. Okay, obviously, by the way, the more positive we are as people, the more positive our children will be as people. And the more we speak ill of others, the more our children will speak ill of others. That, of course, is true. Okay, I would like to speak about a few general ideas. And I'm sorry, I'm really rambling, but okay. So we really already touched on this, but I think it bears repeating. My child, each and every one of my children, are wonderful, amazing, imperfect gifts from Hashem. My child is not perfect. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave myself and my wife each of our children because part of our avoda in life is to help each of these children develop. So now, just to state the obvious, but it's so important to reflect on it. If my child has a shortcoming, that does not mean I'm a bad parent. If my child has a shortcoming, what that means is I have a task to perform here. I have a mission to help the child with this shortcoming. If I've tried forever, my child will still have shortcomings because nobody's perfect. I'm not perfect. My wife's not perfect. And my child won't be perfect. We just have to try our best. So if I see a flaw in my child, that's not something I should be embarrassed about. That's something that I should feel good about in the sense that I recognize my child's shortcoming. Sometimes it's very uncomfortable to recognize this shortcoming. I recognize my child's shortcoming, and I'm focused and devoted enough as a parent that I'm going to do whatever I need to do to help this child deal with it. I know I'm saying obvious things, but sometimes it's not so obvious in the moment. Which means that if I get a phone call one night from a teacher in a nursery school, an elementary school, in a high school, if I get a phone call one night from my teenage child's friend's parent, did you know your child did such and such? Or, hopefully in the context of teachers, you know, we had such and such happen in school today. I'm concerned about your child. The knee-jerk reaction for so many of us is to be defensive. That wasn't my child. My child doesn't have that problem. If you were a better teacher, my child wouldn't have done that. That's the knee-jerk reaction. I should be thanking this person, and I should mean it, because this person is helping me with my task. I want to tell you a criticism someone told me once about a school. They said to me, that school, they only critique or point out shortcomings of the children if the children are disturbing what's happening in class. But anything beyond that, they keep their mouths shut. And the parent, and I think the parent was I can't speak about the way the school operates, but the fact that this was not what the parent wanted, I think the parent was 1,000,000% right. The parent said to me, if you see a problem with my child, I want you to tell me about it. So I want to see what I can do to help. We just had an amazingly powerful presentation this morning about autism spectrum. Okay? one of the things that came up was that the earlier the intervention, the better. So just imagine and it could be a nursery school teacher. A nursery school teacher, an elementary school teacher, calls you and says, your child is acting in a different kind of way, and maybe it makes sense to get them tested. It's so easy to get upset in that moment. First of all, in the example I just gave, they're not telling you definitively, they're just saying, check it out. If they're right, they're doing you the greatest kindness they can do you. That's better than whatever material they taught you that year. If you can get a head start, I want to just share with you... I won't share that one with you. Sorry. I'll shade it a little bit. True story, we'll just gloss the details, okay? There was a teacher called a certain parent and said, I want you to know that your child did such and such in school today, and we want to tell you about it, and we didn't think it was an appropriate thing to do, and we thought you as parents would want to know. And then the teacher said the following to the parent. Full disclosure, your child was not the only child who did this today. There was another child who did this today. I want you to know that other child is not getting called. So you might be upset. Why are you calling me and not the other? And the reason is because I was told that you're the type of parent who would appreciate such a call. In my book, that's one of the best compliments a parent can get. Okay, I'd like to, but again, it's okay. No one's children are perfect, and like I started with, I don't even want my children to be perfect. If my children were perfect, I'd be scared. I really would be scared. So the question is just what our tasks are, and the more clarity we can have about that, the better. Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about fostering positive religious experiences. These are just general concepts. Obviously, everyone has to use their own common sense and understanding of their children. Yiddishkeit is amazing. It's amazing to be a Jew. We're so fortunate. Our children are so fortunate, okay? Not everything in Yiddishkeit is fun. Let's just put it out there. It's wonderful. It's amazing. It's not all fun. And even if we think some things are very engaging and fun and meaningful, our children don't necessarily feel that way about everything that we find meaningful. So first of all, we have the famous rabbinic quote, Mitoch shelo lishma b'al lishma. If I can get my child age-appropriate things, appropriate to the child's strengths and weaknesses and personality, if I get my child to be doing something and I can reward them for doing it, even if I'd really like them to be doing it without the reward, that's great if I can reward them for doing it. But what I think is a really important thing to think about is plastering some cotton candy on type of Yiddishkeit doesn't really make a lot of sense, in my humble opinion. So, if I tell my child, if you come to davening, and you act appropriately in davening, and this is an age that I feel it's reasonable to expect that of the child, we all have to make our own decisions, then I'll give you a baseball card, or I'll give you a candy. I think that's fine. I think that's good. If that helps the child connect to it, mitoch shelo lishma b'al lishma, that's fine. But now, think about the following. I want my child to be in shul. I want my child to understand that shul is a fun place to be. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring my child into shul, and I'm going to have my child run up and down every single aisle in the shul and scream at the top of their lungs 25 times, because I want my child to have fun in shul. So that doesn't make a lot of sense if you think about it, right? I mean, because they're not going to be able to do that when they're older. So what does that mean? I want my child to come and be in shul and find shul meaningful, but to find the fun in something that's not quote unquote fun just doesn't make any sense. So I think there's a big difference between rewarding for things that we feel are age-appropriate for our children, and that's what I mean by kind of slapping cotton candy on type of Yiddishkeit, if that makes sense to people. I want to talk about the Shabbos table. What we try to do in our own home is we try to have unique roles. Mechas Deshem, we have 5 children, Kanayin Hara, of multiple ages, baby to 10. We try to find unique roles for each of the children at the Shabbos table. Because I want it to be, we want it to be, that they feel there are different things that are special for them, that they have a special role that they positively connect to the Shabbos table. So, just to give examples, from a very young age, I have a thing that I like carry the children around and like dance with them during Shalom Aleichem. They're into that. So Kanayin Hara, my 10 and 8 year old, that's not happening anymore. But my 6 and 4 year old, I'm still Bli Ayin Hara. I'm still strong enough to hack it. But then I do that during Shalom Aleichem, and then Eishes Chayil, I take my 8 year old and I just dance with my 8 year old during Eishes Chayil, and then my 10 year old, normally he likes to sing, so he gets to sing a certain zemer during the Shabbos Friday night meal, and like he goes solo, and that's, you know, sometimes my wife if it gives this child to bring out this and this child to bring out that. And here's the thing, these things are constantly switching in my home, and for the child who likes to sing his zemer, it could be for 3 weeks he doesn't feel like it. We all have different approaches. My personal perspective is fine, totally fine. I don't want the Shabbos table to be a pressuring thing. I make him bench, I make him be there for Kiddush. That's part of what my wife and I decide is age appropriate for him. That's not an option. But if he wants to sing the Zemer, he'll sing the Zemer. If he doesn't want to, that's fine. So I think it's very important to create opportunities for the children without it being a pressure cooker. And sometimes my children will absolutely take things over. I never know. I mean, Kanayin Hara are very lively children, Baruch Hashem. I have no idea, any given meal, what's going to happen. It could be that my children will disappear and play, and that's fine with me. It could be my children will dominate the conversation. That's fine with me too. It's all good. Whatever they want. I just want them to feel comfortable, and I want them to feel that to the extent that it's of interest to them, they have a role. That's something that's important to us. And by the way, the more they have that freedom, the more they can do their own thing. We had an experience last Pesach. It was amazing. So it was time for Manashtana. So oldest sings Manashtana, second sings Manashtana, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Gets to Kanayin Hara, at the time, the one who was the youngest. She wasn't really up to singing the Manashtana. But she was upset because she couldn't sing the Manashtana. Everyone sang the Manashtana. So her brothers of their own decided to do some group sing of the Manashtana, and they had her stand up. We have like a piano. They kind of like all stood together on the piano bench, and they just had their own initiative. It wasn't our idea. That was what they did. It was very cute. Second Seder, it's time for the Manashtana, and like almost in unison, they turned to us and they said, "Can we just do the Manashtana together tonight?" So, but again, it was nice, it was sweet, but it was theirs. It was theirs. And then, by the way, just for the record, they were Vildachai's on behalf of the Seder. But. If I may just say one very specific thing about the Seder, particularly when the children are younger, I think the real key of telling your children Matias Mitzrayim is to try to make it engaging for them. So there's different ways to do it. I personally, and again, everyone has to go with their own flavor, but I personally try to craft this whole story, like Halach Ma'anya, like before, you know, this whole story about a family in Mitzrayim that was so sad because the parents worked so hard and they weren't able to do different things for the children. And I give examples of things that my children consider very normal in their lives and they like very much in their lives. So I say, you know, the Abba and Imo worked so hard during the day, they had no energy to read to their children at night. And they had no, you know, and they would never, you know, they never got treats. And there were no Shabbos treats. You know, and I paint this whole thing. So I just feel like, and again, the Seder for sure, oh my, who knows where they're going to be during the Seder. But to try to find the ways to make a connectivity to them, I think is very important. But even for something like that, where I actually really think about before the Seder, my greatest expectation is that my expectations will not be met. That's the bottom line. In other words, I plan, I think, and I have no idea where it's all going to go. And it might totally flop. And by the way, they might not even show up. I mean, they might, I mean, like, they're going to be sitting there, but they might just be tired. It just might not be the night. That's what happens. That's life. Very quickly now, it's so essential to make time and energy for our personal happiness. We want them to be happy. It's so important for them to be happy. We need to be happy to help them be happy. If we're not happy, they're going to have a very hard time being happy. There are times in our own construction of budget where I will tell my wife that it might cost more to have this child care versus that child care. And I'm a pretty frugal guy in many, many ways. But I say to my wife, if you are going to have more energy and you're going to be less haggard because you're not going to have to run out 25 places, it's worth the money to me. That's our greatest asset, is our personal energy and emotion. Really. And of course, we have to take care of our own physical, emotional, spiritual needs. We need to, for those of us, Baruch Hashem, fortunate enough to be married, we need to make time for ourselves as a couple. I'm going to make a confession. I can't imagine I'm the only one who would say this. Most of the time, when I lose my cool with my kids, it's because I'm upset about something else. Now, when I lose my cool, it's something that I have a right to lose my cool about. I mean, it's not like they were sitting there innocently. They did something. But most of the time, the tipping point of when I scream and when I handle it in the wonderful way that I do 3% of the time is if I'm frustrated about something else. And what that just speaks to is how much we need to invest in our own time and well-being and fulfillment in so many ways, in ruchnis and all kinds of things, in order to be the kinds of parents that we need to be. We spoke a little bit before about Derech Eretz for teachers. We are doing our children such a chesed if we're diligent about not criticizing teachers and other authority figures in their presence. I don't say it for the sake of the teacher. I say it for the sake of the student. It's hard to be careful about it. So we really have to be careful about it. I'll just share with you very briefly a story. Honestly, from the perspective of Hilchos Lashon Hara, this is not an ideal story, but from the perspective of Chinuch, I think it's an excellent story. There was and this is also, I can firsthand testimony on this one. There was an adult child sitting with their parents reminiscing about their teenage years. And for some reason, a given teacher's name came up. And the parent turned to the adult child and said, "Wow, what a horrible teacher that person was." That's where I'm not saying it's so good from Lashon Hara perspective. So the adult child turned to the parent and said, "What are you talking about? I complained to you about that teacher all the time, and you always said, you know, you just have to deal with it. You didn't tell me that you thought the teacher was terrible." Now, there might be a benefit in being sympathetic to the child, but in any event, the parent said to their adult child, "Yeah, I defended the teacher, and then the moment you went upstairs to bed, I went into my room and I called the principal and I complained again." Mm-hmm. But this adult child never even knew. Again, there is a value in expressing sympathy to the child. I just want to say that too. But this adult child never even knew how upset the parents were by things, because the parents did not think it helpful to the child to hear all those criticisms of a teacher. It's just something to think about. Okay, very briefly, extremely unpleasant topic, but it's important, and it's important to be aware of it. We live in very scary times when it comes to our children's safety. And these are frightening times, even that, Rachmana Litzlan, our children should not be sexually abused or touched inappropriately. And I'm sorry to even talk about it, but it's really important. There's a really good book. I can't remember if it's Art Scroll or Feldheim. I think it's Art Scroll. It's called Let's Be Safe. It's a picture book, and it's not about this specifically, but it's all kinds of things, but it deals with this also. It's a nice book to have in the house to read to your kids every now and then. It's really important. very, very general things. It's really worthwhile for children to know that there are certain parts of their body that nobody except their parents and a doctor should ever be touching or looking at. And the general rule of thumb is any area that's covered by a bathing suit. Any area that's covered by a bathing suit is private, and it's only for your parents or your doctor. And it's true for many other reasons than safety, but if we have the kind of relationship where our children can speak to us, who knows how many children are saved and protected because they tell their parents something. If you look at the accounts of people who were treated, who had terrible things done to them, so many times that they didn't know if they'd be believed. Isn't that interesting that it fits in with something we spoke about at the very beginning? I don't know if they'll believe me if I say something. The more we can inculcate that belief in our children, who knows what we're doing for them. By the way, we have to be really calm whenever we discuss this topic with them. We have to listen really, really closely. I even spoke to an expert or two, and I was confident that this was okay, but I just want to give you an example. And when I called an expert, I said, am I crazy? They said, you're not crazy. Listen to this. One of my children once went on a trip at school, okay? And they went to an amusement park. And they told me that when they went on a roller coaster, they always felt a strange pinching feeling around their stomach. I'm just giving it as an example because I did not call 911. I did not call the principal and start screaming. I just asked the child a little bit more. I said, tell me, when you say, could you show me where you felt that? And Baruch Hashem, it was the bar, and it was not a big deal. But I'm just saying, when we hear things, we need to ask questions. And I'm saying, and I, like I said, I called someone who deals with these things afterwards. I said, was I crazy that I even asked a question? I said, these are the stories. And Baruch Hashem, it seemed to be nothing. But we really have to have our ears open. And just to say one more thing, we have to be really careful about our children not being alone with people. And you have to use your common sense. Does that mean they shouldn't have a babysitter? Of course, that doesn't mean that they shouldn't have a babysitter. But I'll just tell you, and it's a little bit more for down the road, tutors, bar mitzvah teachers, things like that, all of those things, it's so accepted today that they shouldn't be in a place where there's no one else around. And anybody who you as a parent say, I'm sorry, I'd rather you come and teach my child for the bar mitzvah, you know, when one of us is in the house or in a public place, if they think you're crazy, then no thank you. I'm saying if they can't accommodate you, it's a very normal thing today. I want to tell you, when bar mitzvah kids, boys also, by the way, we're living in a, there are sick people who do crazy things. When kids come to meet with me, I only meet with them if their parent is there or if the office staff is around. That's it. And it's for my own professional safety. And I'm saying those are the times we live in. And it's a very normal and reasonable expectation. We alluded to it once or twice, but one of the greatest things we need to do is we need to daven. We need to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be zocha, to fulfill this tremendous avoda that we have of raising these children. I was just thinking today, we say that when a child is born, there are three partners in the creation of this human being. The father, the mother, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We need to keep their partnership for years and years. And the way we keep their partnership for years and years is we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for success. I mean, obviously, we try as best we can to raise our child in the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu would want us to. But we need to keep that strong partnership. And just to close with one more thought, I actually was talking about a very different topic this morning in a class. But Rav Volba talks about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu implants inside each and every one of us a beautiful neshama. So just think about it. When we're thinking about our dear, wonderful, precious children, we have no idea what HaKadosh Baruch Hu really planted inside of each and every one of them. What's their potential? will they be this high or that high or this way or that way? Or what kind of plant are we talking about? We have no idea. And we just need to shower the child with love and understanding and so much belief in Hashem and love of Yiddishkeit. And just let the sun in, let the water in, and let the child blossom.